I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of Lore Watch. You're going to get a double dose this week. We have a very, very special guest, and I'm going to let him introduce himself because I think it's a super surprise, and I think it's better to hear it in his own voice.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Denuser. I'm the lead narrative designer on World of Warcraft.
Steve's the one that gets to listen to all of our weird tinfoil hatty stuff and laugh as we are way off base, so... it is an honor to have you on the show with us. Thank you very, very much for taking the time today. We know that you are all very busy with everything that's going on today.
No, it is awesome to be here. I'm a big fan of the work you folks do. And so super excited. Let's get to it.
We're definitely a big fan of yours as well. I guess I'll kick it over to Matt first. Matt, is there any pressing questions that you think we can actually get Steve to answer that aren't going to break any sort of like NDA requirements?
All right, I'm fighting the urge to hit the push to talk button that currently doesn't work. we're now having seen a little bit of the con. We're now clear that, you know, since the Anduin story didn't end up going anywhere, we're moving in this new My Little Pony direction. I'm really excited about it. No, seriously, I know you can't tell us too much about what we're going to see, but you've been getting to work. This is a story that you guys have been setting up since. Going, you can go back a long way here. We could probably safely say some of this is from Warlords of Draenor, even. Since you guys have to tell storytelling the way you do, you have to tell stuff in basically you drop a big patch and then people devour it and then they wait. How do you feel that affects how you guys roll out this kind of stuff? How do you get your story beats lined up? How have you been preparing for this moment?
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, it's a great medium to work in, but it poses challenges like anything else, any other form of storytelling. So it has its own, you know, benefits and things that can be challenges. But for like this long-term storytelling, we definitely do take that long view and we plan things out in advance. And, you know, we've learned a lot over the years in terms of pacing and how things work well and some things that didn't work as well. And we try to keep refining that. And so when it came to Shadowlands, we knew we had the story that we wanted to tell that certainly there's, you know, it's a big afterlife, right? Like there's all kinds of realms there and every realm has its own stories and we're introducing tons of great new characters. But we also knew that this story that is kind of this trifecta of Anduin and Sylvanas, the jailer, how their fates intertwine, the choices that have been made over the years. We knew that was going to be a pivotal piece of the story. And so we've gone to great lengths to kind of plan and map that out. We have story beats, you know, that we've hit so far and that we're intending to go. And we knew that we wanted that initial Shadowlands story, the kind of 9-0 launch story, to end on something of a cliffhanger of Sylvanas standing there with the sword, Kingsborn, kind of pointing at Anduin and him saying, now you've got to make your choice. And we wanted to leave it there, but not for too long. So BlizzCon Line is a great chance for us to show you, you know, the what comes next after that. And so it was... It worked out really well for us, we think. I hope everyone's really excited by that. I know it won't be without its without people getting a bit worried about Anduin, but that's perfectly natural. But we're super excited. The story has a long way to go, and it's got some cool things coming, which of course I won't reveal right now.
Yeah, I know.
I think this has been one of the most polarizing stories, at least with the fan base, that I've seen in quite a little bit, especially with Anduin and Sylvanas and different parts of the fandom latching on to different aspects of it. Has that proven to be difficult with looking at how people are reacting to it and knowing what you have planned? Or is it something where the reactions are kind of what you expected?
Well, it's you know, we're well aware of the many different perspectives people have on Sylvanas as a character. There's people who have loved her for a very long time and have looked for the good, the heroic parts of her. And clearly she's had those. Like she's a master strategist. She died for her people. But then she's also done terrible things. And so there's a whole nother group of people who think she should pay for what she's done. And so we're well aware of that.
Some of us are in both camps.
Yeah. And that's fine. You know, hopefully that's the mark of a really interesting character, is that there is a lot of, you know, you can make a case either way, and both cases are perfectly valid. So, you know, that again, that's such a treat to work with characters like that, because if characters are only one thing, you know, you can tell some cool stories with them, but the more multifaceted, the more nuance there is to someone, the longer lasting their impact, I think. And so Sylvanas is definitely one of those characters that is that for us. So, you know, we didn't approach any of this story of hers or Anduin's lightly. We've been very thoughtful. I can't tell you the number of hours that I've spent in conversations with my fellow developers, with folks like Taryn Gregory, Christy Golden. We're joined at the hip and we meet and talk about all this stuff. All the stuff you saw in that cinematic was really a labor of love, of us going back and forth and challenging one another and really like trying to whittle down to the core of the storyline that we're trying to tell there. So, you know, whether, you know, certainly we can't tell a story that pleases everybody, but hopefully there's something in there that you can appreciate. Those nuances, those little looks that Sylvanas gives when you know, thanks to the great work that Taryn and his team do, you can see the look in her eyes and know that she's not just twirling her mustache at Anduin, that this is something that means a lot to her. And now the fact that we know what she's done, that she's gone through with this domination of Anduin, now we get to see how that affects not only him, but it will affect her as well.
All right. I guess I get to go next then. You have a huge canvas here, not just because you're in the Shadowlands. You can pull in characters who've been dead for years. You can pretty much do anything you want to do. And I know you can't tell me stuff, you know, you can't give me a lot of specifics, but has there been any character that you weren't expecting to use that you ended up using that you find has changed or broadened out the story in some way that has made it different than you expected?
That's interesting. You know, we spent so much time thinking about it because, like you said, there were so many opportunities here and so many ways we could have gone. And, you know, we didn't want Shadowlands to just be this nostalgia trip where you kind of just like, oh, what's the greatest hits? And, oh, I get to spend 5 minutes with that character. And, oh, it's so fun to spend. We wanted to pick ones that would be meaningful.
And there's characters that you wouldn't want to use because you pretty much had done all you felt like you needed to do with them or something like that.
That's the thing. Like, you know, there's plenty that it would have been great fun to revisit in some way. But, you know, we also asked ourselves, well, would that just be self-serving? You know, would we be spending time that would be better spent somewhere else? And so that's why we went in some of those cases with characters like Draka. That was someone who had with so much potential to be awesome. And it had only been hinted at in ways that, you know, that a lot of our fans, you know, it was hard for them to pick up on that because it was in a book or, you know, the alternate Draenor and stuff like that. So that gave us a chance to really showcase some of these characters. And I've really grateful that fans have responded so well to people like Draka. And it's great to see Uther there again. As you saw, he made a little appearance in the Chains of Domination cinematic. and so that's another storyline that we'll get to delve into and continue. And
since you had talked about, since you mentioned it with the what your team can actually do, the look that he gives Anduin and the moment there, that was actually one of the things that to see is visual acting on these cinematics. That's actually way beyond. I think I've said before, back in Legion, I think I said that the cinematics had gotten to the point, the rendered cinematics, not even just the amazing, you've always done amazing, you know, fully CGI cinematics, but the in-game rendered cinematics have really broadened out what you can do storytelling wise. That you can cut in and you can still show the characters as they look when we're in the game doing things, having their moments. I think, although I'm never going to forget seeing Agrimmar come down and my character standing there going, oh, hi.
Yeah.
But I think this one, in this expansion, you've done the most in terms of pure emotional storytelling in that way. That's not just somebody telling me what they feel, but actually showing it. It's actually been, it's been kind of amazing. I don't want to, I want to let Joe ask a question, but I just want to throw out, is there any moment in particular that you guys have done that you've gotten an unusual fan reaction to? Like, you weren't expecting people to pick, like, I'll just use one thing, the storytelling in Ardenweald where the little squirrel sits on my head for an entire quest is my, one of my favorite moments. and it's like, I mean, I'm in the land of the dead and I have a squirrel riding on my head. Why is this so affecting? Why do I care about this squirrel and his little friends, that you managed to get me to care about these little, these characters that aren't there very long, you know, and you introduce them and you use them to fill out the world. So is there anybody that you brought in that you've filled out the world with that you were surprised? Like, is Decimator Olgra really popular? Because I wanted to be.
Yeah. People love things like that. And, you know, I, that's really the secret sauce of our team, because that's really the stuff that, you know, we have so many wonderful designers and artists and folks who put their passion into this game. And so, like, you know, the big cinematics and stuff, they get lots of attention and they get lots of love, and deservedly so. But the secret sauce of WoW is really those little moments of unexpected joy and wonder and just something that makes you smile. You know, little squirrel on your shoulder, finding Pepe in a tree, like, and those are the things that we don't plan for. We just kind of let our team go wild in the world. And, you know, Shadowlands is a big story with a lot of, you know, kind of complex themes, and there's a lot of stuff to think about there, but we also want those moments of charm and wonder. And that's where, you know, our team really gets to shine. And so there's lots of those little things tucked away, whether it's, you know, just a little cameo from an NPC like the Decimator, or if it's, again, just some little interactions that make you chuckle. That's the stuff that really keeps WoW special, I think.
You might want to bring Olgra's husband in at some point. I think Olgra's husband could be an interesting character to see that.
Could be.
If we ever knew his name.
Who knows? Some things can never be known, Matt. Come on.
One of the things I think is really interesting about this expansion over some of the other things that I think have happened in the past is Shadowlands feels surprisingly free of some of the weight of Azeroth. A lot of the places we've gone in the past have had sort of like this history that defines what these places can be. In Shadowlands, when you're creating these realms, I'm kind of curious how freeing it was when developing the stories for them with saying, we're not tethered. And along that same vein, because world building is one of those things that I find absolutely fascinating, when doing that, did any of the zones start to take on a life in the story that you didn't expect, or become a standout to you in the creative process?
Yeah, certainly, you know, the ability to have an expansion like Shadowlands that was a blank slate. You know, they're sure we've had mentions, sure we've dipped our toe in, sure we knew that this was you know, the afterlives. But to a large extent, it was wide open territory for us to define and to decide what kind of place it would be, what kind of stories we wanted to tell there. And that sort of challenge is both incredibly exciting and it can be scary for folks too, because we deal so much in, you know, Azeroth itself has so much history and so much familiarity. There's a comfort to kind of wrapping yourself in that blanket and knowing like, yeah, I'm going to tell the story of Kul Tiras or Zandalar. And yeah, you know, I'm going to places that people don't know about, but everything you see there strikes some familiarity to you, you know, like you Kul Tiras is awesome and Borealis and stuff is sprawling, but like it feels like, oh yeah, this is what it should be. Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally get it. You're in there for 5 minutes, or you're running through Zandalar and you just get it. So Shadowlands face like, well, you know, how do we introduce this? How do we tell this story? And so we put a lot of thought into like here, you know, all these concepts that we needed to get across just so you understood what was going on. And then how are we telling these local stories? Because really those zone by zone stories are the hallmark of WoW, you know, immersing yourself in a place and the people and the conflicts they're facing and the hardships and how you're helping them overcome it. That's part and parcel of what World of Warcraft is. And certainly, you know, there was some unknown there, like, are people going to get it? Are they going to understand? You know, is this going to feel too different from what they've seen before? And so I was personally very just heartened by, you know, even the first streams that were going up as people were streaming beta and stuff like that. Like, just, they weren't treating it as this different, wildly different place. It was just Azeroth, but a different way of seeing it, you know, a different facet, mm-hmm. of the existence that was familiar to them. So in that respect, it was what we hoped for. And it was very gratifying that that it seemed to work out. And again, that's totally because of the passion and dedication of the entire team that loves this game so much and loves this world. If anything, you know, things that surprise me, it's always, again, those little moments of delight that somebody put in there that people glom onto. Certainly Ardenweald is full of things that people have just really developed fondness for. But even in places like Maldraxxus, things, you know, like Mereleth has become such a fan favorite as well. So even in a place that can be as brutal and gladiatorial as Maldraxxus, has those same little bits of charm. And again, just kudos to the team for making that possible.
Yeah, that's actually I want to bring that to something. You guys have done this expansion, whatever people's feelings on it, I think it's one of the better ones you've ever done. And you did it under an amazingly difficult, I mean, global pandemic, yes, staying home, the whole nine yards, and you had to delay the launch because of that. Do you feel like that was a right call story-wise? Like, you guys got everything done, everything's worked out the way you're happy with what you got here? Like, because I think you should be, but I want to know what you guys feel.
The team is super proud of this, and it does take on some special significance because of the adversities that we went through. Like, as all of us know, none of this was easy on anybody. You know, there's no one who can just say, oh yeah, that pandemic hasn't really affected me that much. Like, it's touched all of us in many different ways. And when your job is about creativity and bringing, you know, excitement to, you know, the team and to the audience that loves this world so much, like, that's a, you know, that's a pressure of its own under these circumstances. So again, like, it's awesome that we had the support from our leadership to be able to say, you know, we want this to be awesome, and it's just going to take a little longer than we initially thought it would. And from top to bottom, we had that support. And the number one thing for us is that, you know, whatever the circumstances we're facing, that when we deliver something, an expansion to this game that we love, that it represents the quality and the heart that we intend to put into it. So absolutely, it was the right decision. We never want to make people have to wait longer than they want to for content, but we want it to be the awesomest thing it can be. And that takes time sometimes, especially under these circumstances.
I mean, obviously these things mirror the world that they're made in. Mm-hmm. And I mean, going back, like I said, since this is long form storytelling, since you're going to be working on something for years, you might come out with like, hey, let's do an expansion that's all about demons invading. And then 2016 happens. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, and the next expansion where there's a pointless war being fought over resources and we're all kind of unhappy about it, but we have to fight it. And meanwhile, the old gods. And then, you know, the past 4 years are happening while that story is unfolding. Does it ever feel like you guys have got some kind of strange prophecy ball here that you're working on, that you like predicting things?
Well, I hope not. I hope it's, I hope the secret isn't that that World of Warcraft is somehow prescient in its predicting things. No, like, you know, yeah, the world is reflected in our day-to-day lives, our day-to-day work. There's no way that it isn't, but you know, the great thing about working on this game, though, is that it's also aspirational, so that no matter what we're facing in life, Azeroth is a place that we can be, sorry if this is going to sound corny, but I mean it, like our better selves, like our best selves can go into this world, and we can see ourselves in a way that it can be hard to sometimes in life. And that's one of the most gratifying things, as I've met players over the years of MMOs that I've worked on. It's that so many of them are grateful for this. I won't call it escape, even though, you know, you can think of it as an escape from reality, but it's really like just being able to engage in kind of an ideal place where you can, you know, stand beside people from all over the world and just do these wonderful, fun things and just, you know, get fancy armor and look cool and have mounts and pets and all of that stuff. But it's just a very enriching part of people's lives.
And, yeah, my wife often says, you know, in when I'm down in the world, in the game, I can go do something. Like if I have a problem, I can do something. I don't have to just sit here and take it. So yeah, there is that.
Yeah, that's, you know, I don't have any illusions that we're curing cancer or, you know, like frontline workers who've been so amazing through this pandemic. Like they're the true heroes. But I do strongly feel that games like this, these worlds that our team and many other teams around the world make, they have value and that they have substance and that they can bring good things to the world. And, you know, that's where I take my pride. That's, you know, one of the things that keeps me going, no matter what we're facing in the world, is I know that we're bringing some light and some hope to people. And even in a small way, that feels really good.
I think it's also especially really nice to point out, like, these types of games, yeah, they have value, and I call it reality augmentation, just like you have that enrichment, where we can do things together and uncover things together. And it's sort of like that quest for cooperative experience sort of like just kind of happens, and it fits so naturally here. And it's also one of those things where I think you have built in some pretty big moments in the story beats that sort of help facilitate that a lot too. They feel very grand. They feel very important, especially when you're doing them with friends or you don't feel alone in those moments, even when you're playing them alone. So first, I want to say thank you for that with the development of the story in that regard, because you'd never feel like you're truly alone, which is really, really interesting, especially for anybody who plays these games solo. Between the companions, the NPCs you interact with, the number of NPCs you interact with at a very close level, phenomenal work as far as that goes. The other thing that I was going to point out or ask about is, over the last several years, it seems like there's been a very concerted effort to have one narrative voice. Is that accurate? Has there been something that as a group, as a company, you've sat down and said, you know, questing and storytelling and lore and everything is going to start, you know, actually interacting with each other? Because for a while there, it felt like there was a little bit of a disconnect earlier on in WoW's evolution. And over the last several expansions, it's definitely seemed like you've kind of got one point you're all working towards.
Well, you know, I've been on the team only for, well, I guess it's about 6 years now. And so I can't speak to, you know, how things went before, but, you know, it, like with any medium, people's, you know, hopefully where our skills are evolving and that we're getting better at doing some of these things and that we're learning lessons from what went before. And, you know, even if you look at those first expansions, Burning Crusade, Wrath of the Lich King, Cataclysm, like they were very much self-contained stories and they were awesome for, you know, for immersing yourself in that. And then everything wrapped up and then you moved on to the next thing and the pattern shifted, as I think entertainment in general has moved towards a more, you know, kind of a longer form storytelling, that our expansions started taking that on as well. And that's a tradition we've continued to evolve. And certainly Shadowlands, as you've pointed out, builds on threads and plots and characters that we've been working with over the last several expansions that we're building to these things. You know, and hopefully it does feel more connected. We spent a lot of time in Shadowlands and, you know, even in updates like Visions of N'Zoth, we tried to really make the story feel like it was embedded in the systems that you were engaging with, you know, things like the horrific visions and the corrupted gear. They all work together to tell the story of N'Zoth's influence in the world. And we tried to do that in Shadowlands as well, with the soul binds and the legendaries, you know, interacting with the rune carver, like all that kind of stuff. So, and that's definitely something we plan to continue. And it just, you know, it takes effort to be vigilant and to keep encouraging, but we've got such a wonderful team that really does want to infuse story into everything. I always say that, you know, it doesn't matter what your job is on the team. Everyone's a storyteller. And if we do that, and if we're conscious about it and we try really hard, then that story will just get, it'll just feel natural to you as you're playing the game. It'll just feel like the story is embedded everywhere around you. And that's the ultimate goal. And we keep trying to get better at doing that.
All right. That's a good answer. I love you saying that. However, since we've only got a few minutes left, just between you, me, Josh, Joe, and the many people who will listen to this recording, so not a lot of people, Rune Carver is totally the premise, right?
I'm sorry, who?
No, I didn't think so. Maldraxxus is a giant corpse. It's a dead person. We're going to find out who that person was, right? Big dead guy?
A big dead.
I'm digging up bones and there's big hairs growing out of it. Come on, man.
Well, you know, it is part of the story of Maldraxxus that the realm itself and the other realms of the Shadowlands for that matter kind of manifest what they need to do the job that is put to them. And so in Maldraxxus, you've got this immortal army that's supposed to be the best of the best. And so the land itself gives them what they need in order to create their you know, necropolises and their fortresses and all of that kind of
their
stuff.
Rivers of goo that they have for no reason.
it's all there for a reason.
Okay. I know, but I did want to at least ask a few of these questions just because if I don't ask them, people can be like, why didn't he ask about that?
So, oh yeah, we'll hear about it later, I'm sure.
Yeah. I do want to talk real fast about the Rune Carver though.
Mm-hmm.
When you came up with the idea of using that, because you just talked before about how corrupted gear helps tell the story. Mm-hmm. The whole idea of the Rune Carver's memories having been ripped out of him, mm-hmm. and using that not just as a power element, like you get that to make your legendaries, you're essentially infusing your legendaries with the memories of the Rune Carver. You're making his memories into weapons and armor in this case, because we're not making weapons at the moment. But you know what I'm
helping
saying.
Him too, Matt. You're bringing back those memories to him to give him a little piece of himself.
But
so
that,
come on, it's not that selfish.
I'm not just saying it's selfish. It is selfish, but whatever. But what it gets me is you get a chance, you can use this to tell us about him through our gameplay. Like you go and you do a dungeon, you get the piece, you bring it back. At least in one case, you get to see an interaction between the jailer and the Rune Carver.
Mm-hmm.
Through these memories, you get to see that character in action, and that's the kind of thing I'm at. I'm curious as to, like, do you ever sit down and just, like, you have to work with the people who do, you know, the design of the game to come up with, okay, how are we going to mechanically represent this story? You use corruption as an example. How did you guys decide to use corruption to make that a storytelling element? How did you work together to get that done?
Well, it really can come up in a variety of different ways. Like in the case of Corrupted Year, I think it was one of the itemization folks who was like pitching that as, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? And then you know, we're like, yeah, let's, what if we did that then? And it's like, you know, you always hear about us being so iterative, and that's true. And that's, we iterate on ideas. And so one person comes up with the core of something, and then five other people find ways to plus that up. And we're always trying to find the best versions of that thing. So in the case of the Rune Carver and the legendaries, I don't remember all the details. I'm sure that we knew that we wanted to do legendaries. And we, as we were just talking, getting together, having meetings, talking about like, what would be a great way to tie that into the world and into the characters. I think we had this character that we wanted, that was going to be a part of the story, and it just kind of naturally started dovetailing, and we found those connections. And so it really just amounts to people who all want to tell the best story, whether it's through quests or cutscenes or systems, and then just getting us, virtually in a room together in the case of Shadowlands development. But really, we just have so much energy and so much passion when we can just vibe off one another and help one another that way.
All right. Joe, you got anything else?
I mean, there's so many things I could ask, but I don't think.
Yeah, I want to ask about Taronda. Do you think? Yeah, you think you'll tell us about Taronda if I ask about Taronda?
I'm assuming, and I'm hopeful that we have more coming up with her. Yes, please, please.
I can tell you that yes, there is. The Taronda story is not done, and that's one of those characters that that endured a lot in Battle for Azeroth, and we've shown her, leaping into the maw. If you've played the Ardenweald campaign, you've seen that she's on the hunt for Sylvanas. And, I don't want to give any spoilers, but Taronda's got some great moments coming up. But, she's facing danger, too. That power that she took on, in the name of claiming vengeance for her people. We've seen examples in the game of how that power has a terrible cost. And you've met other Night Warriors who similarly were given that power, and you know that they did not meet a happy end. So we care a lot about Taronda. So it hopefully that we can help her come to terms, not only with this power that she has and how to deal with that, but also how can she sate this this thirst for vengeance that is consuming her in ways just like the power of the Night Warrior is.
Matt, any last questions?
No, I think we're done. I don't want to. I basically would be just going like I'm chipmunk asking questions, and we have to stop at some point.
But I think that butts us up right to our time. Steve, I want to thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk with us today and, dealing with some of our weirdness as we move through this.
Well, I want to thank you, and there's a lot of other podcasters and content creators out there too, but like I always appreciate the thoughtfulness that you and your listeners when they send in questions. It's really wonderful, and again, it's we work on these things so far in advance, and when they come out, you never know for sure what the reactions will be. Will things people pick up on the things that you would hope they would, or what new things will they discover that you didn't realize would be there? And it's just so gratifying to listen to shows like yours that help us, realize what's connecting with our audience, and it helps our story going forward. So thank you guys.
Oh, well, you're very welcome for that. And thank you.
All right. Let's do this again sometime.
Yeah, now you get to be, next time we do it, you get to be like the WandaVision writers watching people drop, because we'll give you all of our crazy fan theories. We didn't this time. They're there. I'm sitting here going, oh, I forgot to ask about this.
Well, good. It'll give us a chance to chat down the road.
Indeed. I'm looking forward to future chats. But thank you very much.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout.
36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.